Welcome to Recurring Nightmares, episode 23. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
Hey.
And after a couple months of having fun, doing some action movies, I dragged us back down into the depravity with a couple, I think, pretty disturbing movies tonight. But, as always, we start off just talking, just getting to know each other, and seeing what we've been watching. And I'll start with you, Chris. What have you been watching?
I went and saw the number one movie of the past weekend, Uncharted.
Oh, yeah.
Based on the Sony PlayStation video game series of the same name. It's a generic, like, Indiana Jones type movie. It's an adventure movie. They're going after treasure. They actually keep it a little bit grounded. There's no real, like, mysticism going on. Like, I don't know. You've played those games, right, Jeff?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, they always end up kind of like Indy does as well, where it's always, like,
magic.
Some, like, supernatural bullshit going on. This actually keeps it pretty grounded. It's more akin to maybe National Treasure.
All right.
Where it's, you know, they're going after some historic artifact. They're looking for a lost treasure. And, you know, the adventure that goes around that, you know, traps in the city. Very reminiscent of, like, The Last Crusade, where they, you know, underneath, what's it, like, the library in Italy. Like, they found that tomb or whatever. Like, stuff like that. Like,
Yeah.
And it's fun. Like, I mean, I don't know, as somebody who's played the games and knows the characters, I don't know if Tom Holland and Mark Wahlberg are.
Neither of them fit. Yeah.
No, not really. But it, like, if you could be like, subtract yourself from the equation and your understanding of the series and just enjoy it as, you know, an adventure treasure hunting movie. It's fun. I enjoyed it. I would watch another one because we don't get, you know, fun kind of adventure movies like that anymore.
Funny you said, kind of like Indiana Jones. It's like, wasn't the game? The game was like kind of ripping off Tomb Raider, which was kind of ripping off Indiana Jones. And now we got a movie based on the game that was ripping off the movie.
Yep.
We've gone full circle.
Yep. It's all back around. I mean, I don't think anybody was expecting it to. It did very well, I think, at the box office. $44 million.
You are the first person I have seen, critic or otherwise, that has seemed to like it, though. So I'm glad, okay. I'm glad somebody liked it.
Yeah. I mean, I came out and went, that was fun. Like, I went in with no expectations.
I think our friend Earl saw it. I don't think he liked it even. Okay. I don't know. Maybe he did. I don't know. He doesn't always post what he thinks about the movies on Letterboxd, you know?
I mean, it is not anything, like, amazing.
You had fun.
Yeah, it's a fun movie. I enjoyed the nearly 2 hours that it length it was.
Oh, whoa, under 2 hours. Get out of town.
Yeah, I think it was, like, 152 or something like that. And that's probably with, like, 6 minutes of credit, so it's probably, like, 145 total.
Wow, I'm shocked. They don't seem to do anything like that under 2 hours now.
Yeah, like, that's cool. You know, it was a nice, like, breezy time. It's, you know, it is a modern blockbuster type film. Like, it is set piece to set piece. And, like, you're getting a little bit of character with, like, you know, Tom Holland as Nathan Drake and Mark Wahlberg as Sully. But, like, it's not really, like, it's about, like, the bullshit they're getting into, the places they're exploring and the traps that they're setting off. And is that cool or not? To me, it was, like, I had fun with it. I think that's really all I can ask at that movie. So
yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'm probably not expecting a ton out of it either. Like, I guess one question before we move on from this movie is, taking out, you know, whether he looks like the, whether he fits the video game character, did you like Tom Holland in it?
Yeah, I will say him, Wahlberg, and Sophia Ali, who is, like, the main female lead here. They're all good. like they all have good chemistry. They work real well together. I think where the film is stupid is like when it tries to be the video game. Like, oh, he finds like, you know, he has that in the games, he has a very distinct look. He has the kind of the backpack with the gun, with the, you know, the holster on it. So I think they make this epic moment of him like putting it on, like yeah. towards the middle. It's like, it's really dumb, but everything else is fine. Like there's a, yeah, it's stupid. But when they're just like, when they're just doing the adventure stuff, it's fun. Like there's another part where he like it looks like a video game jump. Like the way he jumps up and grabs onto the ledge, it's like really dumb. And they like kind of focus in on it. It's like, hey, look, like this is, you know, this is what it looks like in the game,
yeah,
right?
Thing,
like,
yeah.
No, please don't do that. Just make a movie. That's a yeah. movie. Because like the rest of it's fine.
Yeah.
It does not get the eyes on it that it does if this was called like something else and these weren't the characters.
Yeah.
Like if it
yeah.
was just like Mark Wahlberg and Tom Holland and, you know, under, you know, Hunt for Treasure or whatever, like some stupid name. I don't think it gets the eyes on it, but
yeah,
this pulled in people because it was named Uncharted, whatever you want to call them, Nathan Drake and Victor Sullivan, who cares? Like, they're fun yeah. to watch on screen. They have good chemistry together.
I mean, that's more than you could usually ask from a video game movie, so.
Yeah.
What else you got?
I saw Scream.
Yeah. What'd you think? I saw what you thought. You liked it.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine. It knows what it is. It doesn't try to be anything more than that. It is... They call it... They name it in this. They call it a requel. That's what they call Halloween as well, and another movie we're going to talk about briefly.
They rip on elevated horror. And
yeah, they like kind of like and yeah, it's evidently, and I am not a huge Scream fan.
Me neither. I was in Once Upon a Time.
Like I like the first movie. I think it like at the time it was really, you know, it said something about the horror genre that was happening then.
Yeah. It was, yeah.
They stretched it too far from there.
Sorry, go ahead.
I just think like what, 2, 3 and then 4, like I think they just kept overreaching. I didn't like 2 at all. 3 was fine. 4 was okay. And this one is like, yeah, I don't know the reason for it happening. Is like it's kind of like, hey, Hollywood needs to keep pumping out, like they say it, like Hollywood needs to keep pumping out these like franchises. And they like break it down kind of like in the first one where, you know, they break down horror films. Like there's a character here that breaks down where horror is today, like
Randy character.
Yeah, it's played by yeah, some teenage girl, Jasmine Savoy Brown. She plays this girl Mindy, and who has a brother. They're like huge horror buffs. They are everybody in this film is related to somebody from the first film. Like somehow related. The main character, I think her name is Sam. She is the daughter of the original killer.
Yeah.
I can't not Shaggy, the other guy.
Billy
yeah.
Loomis.
Yeah, Billy Loomis. Yeah.
I can't remember. I can't believe I know that.
Yeah. And then like you know, it all keeps tying, and like I guess if you're like a huge Scream fan, this probably works really well for you because like there's lots of ties back to the original. I didn't catch them all, like whatever. They bring back they bring back Neve Campbell, Courtney Cox, David Arquette. They are mostly there for like
they're passing the torch.
Yeah, they're basically glorified cameos.
Yeah.
But ultimately, like I thought it was fun. There are things that I won't spoil them, you know, here, 'cause people are probably gonna like watch it, but there are things about it that are just like kind of funny, 'cause like they basically call out who the killer is in the film. But then it does a good job, much like the original movie, of casting doubt on that. Like you're pretty sure up front this is who it is. And then they start casting doubt, and you're like, I don't know, maybe not. Like, and you know, then ultimately it is who you probably thought it was at the beginning. But it's a fun ride to get there. It's not doing anything amazing. It's stupid that they just called it Scream.
Do you feel like you have to watch four again?
Oh, absolutely not.
Okay.
Like
good. Good.
this, you do not have to watch anything except for the first movie
Which I
for this
remember.
to work.
Oh. Cool.
Like it is like Halloween, it is like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, where nothing like that stuff happened. They don't actually ignore the fact that Scream 2, 3, and 4 happened. They call it out, quick
Not
and
important
cuts.
to
But yeah, it's not important to the plot. The only
All
one
right.
that's important is the first one. I don't know. It's not great, but like for it's another film under 2 hours. It kind of breezes by, and I'm like, that was fun. Like that wasn't a bad way to spend a Saturday afternoon in the theater.
Cool. I will see it when it's on VOD.
Yeah,
It's
probably soon, I would think, because it came out in
getting to
early
that point.
January.
Yeah.
So, and it's doing. I think it's doing pretty well.
It did do good. We'll
So,
be we'll get you're gonna get more screen.
I'm sure. Yeah, $77 million. I'm sure it was not a big budget film. So, good for them, I guess. Like, I mean, we were going to
Sure.
continue to get them anyway. I didn't think it was bad.
Cool. Good to hear. Our friend Nelson is like a super fan of this series, and he liked this one, but I think he said it was the weakest sequel for him. But he's strange. He like thinks that Scream 3 is like the best one or something. I'm like,
I heard
I
it
don't know
from
about that.
multiple people. Like, I don't remember it being the best one.
I remember being the worst. I don't know.
That was the one that took
Again,
place on like the movie lot, right? Like,
it's like Silent Bob, Jay and Silent Bob are showing up, and
yeah, I thought that was dumb.
and I like those guys, but just like, why? All right, well, cool. I'll give my thoughts when I see it. I'll
Good,
let you
good.
know.
Do we want to talk about the other recoil?
The elephant in the room. What else did you see, Chris?
Texas Chainsaw Massacre. You saw it first, but you did. I was gonna watch it eventually, but you kind of talked me into watching this. I think it's like a without credits, it's like what, 75 minutes long, maybe
73 minutes and 52
73.
seconds.
Yeah,
That's like how long movies were in like the 30s.
it's crazy because I mean there is stuff here you could have built around. They don't do any of that. It is really dumb. The setup is dumb.
It's baffling. Like I don't know what that setup is, but okay.
It
These
just
like
comes out of nowhere.
influencers, like I don't know if they're influencers or yeah, they're kind of influencers. They're fucking like they like bought a fucking dying Western town in the middle of nowhere, and they're gonna like instantly flip it by auctioning it. I don't
Yeah.
know if that's a thing people do. It's weird premise, dude. Or like a slasher movie, like
We get
okay.
like 12 seconds of them even explaining the idea that like they want to create some like millennial utopia or something like
I
that.
yeah, because all the fucking people want to move there. I did again. I don't know. The premise is fucking stupid, and then there's like things beyond that that I think are like also terrible. Like I don't give a shit. I'll say what I want to say about it. Like the fact that Leatherface is in this town and he's been living in an orphanage since the end of the first movie. It makes no sense, dude. I'm sorry. It doesn't make any sense. Like it.
It really doesn't. And what's sad is you could have spent 5 minutes. You could have made, you know, your runtime instead of 73 minutes, 78 minutes, and just given any sort of context for how he ends up there, how he ends up in this orphanage. And I don't hate the fact that like he cares for, you know, the orphanage mom, and
Yeah.
that's what sets him off. But there's no reason to correlate from the begin from the first movie, because they ignore everything else that's ever happened in the series. So
Yeah, you're like, I am the true sequel to the first movie, and it's like, all right, I remember how the first movie ended, and now you're telling me at after the end of the first movie, he like walked to this town, or whatever. He somehow ended up in this town. Like, it doesn't. It's stupid.
it makes no sense. Was it Texas Chainsaw 3D that kind of it gives us that look? I think like the first 5, 10 minutes of that film, which is short as well and not good.
It is also like a legacy, like we are the true sequel to the first one.
But at
So
least
they were the ones
that,
that kicked that off.
yeah,
And it was
the,
better, it was a better setup than
yeah,
this.
it at least gives context for how does Leatherface end up in the basement of
Yeah.
this house, being cared for by these people? Like, how does that happen? Like, they thought that through, whereas these people, for whatever reason, just were like, all right, Leatherface, you know, we're just gonna throw him in this town and he's gonna go on a killing rampage. Cool, right? Yep. All right, good.
Yeah, and then meanwhile, the final girl from the first movie, Sally Hardesty, is just like Laurie Strode, been waiting for 50 years to like kill this just Leatherface, I guess. I guess he's the only one that matters.
And not like she has nothing, the actress has nothing to do with the original movie, right? Like,
The actress is dead, so the bringing Sally back. Dumb idea to begin with. You know what makes it special in Halloween 2018? For one thing is it's Jamie Lee Curtis.
right, that, yeah, and like it, that makes sense there in Scream. You know, they bring back Courtney Cox and Neve Campbell and David Arquette. Like, they're bringing back the legacy characters played
The
by
people who
the
played them, yeah.
legacy. Like, okay, we're 50 years in the future now. Sally should be there. Like, doesn't make any sense because no one knows who this Olwen Foray is. And does anybody really care about Sally? Like,
I just think that like it worked. It somehow worked in Halloween, but it's a really silly idea also. Like even if they did it better than they did here, like the idea that this person who survived a night with like a family of maniacs would spend the rest of their life like building their life around that.
sure.
Again, I can't explain the difference.
But I
It
think,
worked once.
well, I think the
Danny
difference
McBride, the better
is,
writer.
I think the difference with Halloween is that they spend time, like, even though, like, Laurie is this crazy prepper and she's preparing for Michael to come back, her family doesn't, like, they don't buy into it. They think she's crazy. They make her seem like she's crazy.
Yeah.
And then when it happens, okay, she's not crazy. And that's, I think that's why it works, because nobody's like, all right, Michael's definitely getting out of jail after 40 years. Like, he's gonna
Yeah.
come kill us all. Yeah, I don't know.
So
And she's just listening, like, she's just like listening on the police band, like waiting for the chainsaw guy. Man, at this point, he'd be what, 70 years old? That's another thing that makes zero sense here. This ostensibly takes place in reality, right? Like, how is this 70-year-old monster, like, how is he running around waving a chainsaw around like he's fucking Hulk Hogan in 1985?
I don't know. It's like the people that made it didn't even think that. It's like, dude, in Halloween, he's always set up as this ultimate evil. You know what I mean? Like, the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre is just like this horrible nightmare that could happen. Like, you know? I
Yeah,
just.
that's why it's scary, because like you could be driving along, you get a flat tire, and you end up with some fucking crazy cannibal house.
They're not, you know, they're not supernatural. They're poor people who are using people as meat. That's it. Like, it's not, none of those people are supernatural in that. Like, I mean, the grandpa, he's like 800 years old, but I just, so yeah, like every big kind of like plot idea in this, I just think is horrible, you know? And nothing is developed enough because it's so short that like it almost doesn't feel like a movie. It's just like, here's a couple ideas to get us from kill to kill. The kills, some of the kills are pretty good, I thought. I
Yeah,
mean,
they're decent. There's some pretty good gore.
yeah,
And there is some grisly looking shit, like who is the mechanic guy, like when he goes up again. That is some brutal shit
it
right
kept
there.
going. Like, I was like, oh, it's done, and it kept going. The first kill, I was like, oh, maybe there's a chance the critics were just being harsh on this, and I'm, you know, in for a good time. But no, it's just like, that's it. Like, I think the only thing that the movie had going for it is it did go for it with the violence, but it's like every idea in it is dumb, and it just doesn't feel like a complete movie to me. It honestly feels like not a full movie, but I don't know.
It's a film that, like, it's almost like conceptually, like some of that shit you see on YouTube, where it's like, all right, we're gonna put Michael up against this, and like, good production values, but it's like a fan film that is not really thought out because it's only 15 minutes long, yet this is 80 minutes long and has Netflix backing.
Yeah, it I wasn't a huge fan of this. Put it that way. I
No,
thought it was pretty bad.
it's not particularly good. I do hope that eventually Elsie Fisher's Lila finds out how to shut off her electric her self-driving car, and
Yeah.
she waits 50 years, and then 130-year-old Leatherface comes after her or something.
The other fun thing about this movie is, like, it brings up a bunch of political topics, and so it's interesting to see like people's reaction to it, because it doesn't, like, I think if anything, it has like a slightly conservative point of view.
Has nothing to say, like, ultimately.
Yeah, ultimately, I don't think it really cares, but like in a way, it really makes sure to, like, make the conservative type characters likable and
Oh,
the
yeah.
liberal characters not likable.
Yep, because
And it's really
they.
funny, because, but like, people will read whatever they want into it. I've seen a bunch of people now call this woke Texas Chainsaw, and I'm like, what movie did you see? Because if anything, it was like way more sympathetic to the rural Texas characters than these kids that were coming in. I don't know.
The only people that have any personality in it are the mechanic guy.
The guy who voted for Trump.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like Leatherface himself, honestly.
Yeah. And it's like, these are the guys that would have voted not for Biden or, you know, whatever. Like, you
Right.
know
You
what I mean? Like,
kind of feel bad for the orphanage mom because like they're kicking
yeah.
her out and she's like, "No, this is my home. Like I have the deed." And they're like, no, get the fuck out. Like, and she's the one that has a fucking Confederate flag. Like, you
Yeah.
feel bad for the lady that's flying the Confederate flag outside of her
When they
orphanage.
take the flag down, the dude like shoves it in one of the main characters' faces, like, here's your fucking flag, you know? And it just goes to show though how toothless the politics are in it, that like someone could watch it and get the opposite point of view out of it. Like, it's just like whatever you want to see in it
It's
is,
there,
that's
yeah.
what you're gonna see. Yeah, so but yeah, overall pretty bad, I thought. I don't know. There's people who like it, but
I'm glad people found some enjoyment out of it. Like, and if all you want is the, slicing and dicing with a chainsaw, it has some. I think the bus scene is actually pretty decent.
it has some, but it lacks any of the terror. Like, when I think of like the remake, there's parts in that like
Scary.
the violence in it is like upsetting, and in the violence here is just like fun. Like, I don't know, it's
Yeah.
not.
That's like, I am not a big Texas Chainsaw fan, and I've never understood the appeal of Leatherface as like people are like, oh, Leatherface is right up there with Michael and Jason. Like, he's not a character, right?
He shouldn't. It's the family.
Right.
Like, if you're a big fan of Texas Chainsaw, like, you're saying you're not a big fan of the series, and you get that.
Yeah.
I actually care about these movies, and it's like, Yeah, that's what they don't get. It's like he's not
He's not the
Jason
star.
or Michael, or he's just their fucking like kind of mentally challenged family member. You know what I mean? Like he's that's it. Like
And
I don't
like
know.
that's scary when put in the
Yeah.
context of the rest
But
of the family that are kind of
exactly.
like, no, like Leatherface, go do that, or whatever the hell they call him, kid, or like
Either
go,
leather.
yeah, go,
Yeah.
go get him. And like, it's just this big brute that's doing what his grandfather or his mom or his brothers have ordered him to go do, as opposed to like Jason and Michael are inherently scary because they are supernatural beings. Oh, whatever. Yeah, bad movie. Glad people liked it. Like some people liked it.
I guess. Good for them. It's pretty bad, in my opinion. Anything else you've seen?
No, I think we'll cut it there for me. What have you been up to?
Well, other than that, classic movie. I've seen some good stuff that's new. I saw Kimmy on HBO Max, the new Steve Soderbergh movie. It's like Zoe Kravitz is this. She like works from home. She like think of like an Alexa, like the those Amazon
Yeah, Siri,
devices.
Alexa type thing, yeah.
Yeah, she like works for this company. Like, and the device in this is called a Kimmy instead. But she basically works for this company, like listening to customers' interactions with their Kimmy, and like fixing mixed communication issues. Like it's like her job. She hears a recording that they thought was a miscommunication issue, but when she hears it, it's pretty clear that like some woman is getting like sexually assaulted on it, like getting raped. And she wants to get to the bottom of it. She's like, I think I've heard of crime. And she starts trying to report it to her superiors. And she uncovers more trouble than she thinks. And this forces her to leave her house, which she has not done because she's agoraphobic, and the pandemic made that even worse for her. And what you get is like a tight 90, I think it's like a 90 minutes, like thriller, like paranoid thriller, and it's really fun. This one critic I like, he said that like, Steven Soderbergh, like turning in a doodle to HBO is better than what most filmmakers could do when they're trying. It does kind of feel like that. It feels like something that like Soderbergh shit out in an afternoon, but it's fantastic. It's really fun, and it's really clever about how it uses the technology in the movie and uses like the pandemic and all that. Like they used the pandemic smartly to her character and stuff. Like it's, I don't know. It's a fun 90-minute movie that it's probably going to end up being better than a lot of movies that come out in theaters this year. So,
Nice.
that's a big recommend. I don't know. I don't think you got to see that
I
one
did
yet, right?
not. It's I did add it to my HBO watch list. I just haven't sat down yet,
Yeah,
but
you'll dig it.
yeah.
Another big new movie I saw. I don't know about big, but is the new film by Sean Baker, which is called Red Rocket. There was some like buzz around this movie. Unfortunately, I don't think it got nominated for anything. Good movie. I don't think you've seen any of this guy's movies.
I don't believe so.
He's a filmmaker to check out. He's really great. I think he's made three movies now. I think they're all excellent. I would probably most strongly recommend The Florida Project, but this is kind of right up there. Simon Rex plays this guy who's like a porn actor who, when we meet him, he's like, he has left LA and he's coming back to this shit small town in Texas that he ran away from years ago. And he's like, he doesn't have like a penny to his name. And he's asking his wife, who he just left behind, if he can move back in. It just kind of follows these characters and like basically him in this Texas town, and he's total scumbag, but he's got charm about him, like he can be charming a little bit. And Simon Rex is really good in the role. Everyone's really good in the role. Some of the people are this director will like find people who are non-actors. And it's really kind of hard to tell the line between who's who, like who's a real actor, who's like kind of a real person. looks beautiful. It's fun. It's like some of the subject matter will be icky for some people. All three of his movies have been in some way about sex workers. I think you're a big boy. I think you could handle it.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It's worth watching, I think. Also saw Antlers, which I know you probably talked about last year on the show.
Yep.
I thought it was pretty good. I wasn't
Yeah.
like blown away by it, but I thought it was pretty good. I really like Jesse Plemons, the kind of main guy in it. So that helps. I don't know. I thought it was like a cool kind of monster movie. I did watch it again to show it to Melissa. And the second viewing, I'm like, yeah, this doesn't have high rewatchability. It's kind of drags a little bit if you already know where it's going. But first watch, I'd say horror fans should check it out.
Yeah, I th thought it had some like good visuals in there,
Yeah.
some good horror. Yeah, but
Better actors than you get in a lot of horror. Like, getting Jesse Plemons, I forgot who played his sister in it.
Kerry Russell.
Yeah. She was, I think, on The Americans. Like, she's a pretty big actor. Anyways, I dug it. Like, it didn't, blow me away or anything, but I think most horror fans will dig it. I think that's, you know what? I'll throw one more thing out there. And this is a recommendation for anyone who's like me and really like wrote off superhero stuff and has kind of stayed away from it for a couple of years. You should check out Peacemaker. 'Cause have you watched the show, Chris?
No, I do know that like we have a pair of friends who have been like raving about it. I just haven't gotten into it yet.
I checked it out tonight before the show, and like I said, even if you think like you're sick of all this cape bullshit, which I am. This is completely R-rated, and very, very funny. And I think I'm three episodes in. And at first, I was like, the first episode starts off and it's so fun. I'm like, this is great, but is it going to be able to sustain this for eight episodes? So far, it has for three. So, yeah, you should check it out. I know you'll dig it.
I mean, John Cena plays Peacemaker, and I liked him in Suicide Squad.
And he's Peacemaker in that, right?
Yeah, he's Peacemaker in that. I'm
See,
not.
I watched part of that movie and I didn't finish it because that I thought it was better than most superhero shit, but I'm like, this is still kind of the superhero shit.
It
This is a
is.
little different.
Okay.
I'd say this is even more R-rated and less broad than the comedy in the Suicide Squad. Like, this
Okay.
is like the first episode. He's picking up this chick at a bar and they show him banging her. Like, it's the humor in it is just, it's very. I honestly feel like Marvel held James Gunn back because this is James Gunn Unchained. He's just doing whatever the fuck he wants. And so far, he's written and directed every episode, so I wonder if he does that for the whole thing. You're gonna like Peacemaker.
Okay.
That's kind of it, man. So I think we should get to what we came here for,
All right.
which is a couple of, I call them evil kids movies. And one of them, the first one we're going to talk about is it's not technically a horror movie, but I think it's pretty dark and fucked up and disturbing. And I was actually surprised watching these both back to back by how much I think they link up thematically. But anyways, our first film is Bully.
Don't understand what the hell is going on with you. You guys don't work, you don't go to school, you don't do anything. All you do is lay around and drive your cars. You know how that makes me feel?
Mad. Y'all want to go to a party?
Sure.
Welcome to the party.
I got a new boyfriend, Mom. What kind?
A hug.
Might as well get high.
baby. You know what I like.
Bobby and I have been friends since we were, like, almost born.
Raped Allie.
Treats everyone like shit.
So what are you gonna do, Lisa?
He's the source of everybody's troubles.
Are we really gonna do this?
Scott deserves to die.
Dead! Turn those goddamn lights off!
Is he dead yet?
Getting there.
Mom, what if you witnessed a crime, like a murder?
What are you kids up to, Allie?
We killed Bobby.
You murdered Bobby Kent?
I wouldn't even say they murdered him. I mean, he was fighting back.
Directed by Larry Clark, who he did that movie Kids in the 90s, which was pretty infamous at the time, and I think is kind of forgotten now. It's written by Zachary Long and Roger Pullis, and it's based on the book Bully by Jim Schutze. And I guess I should throw right up front here that this is a true story.
Yes.
You know, I don't judge it based on that. I think it actually just works as a movie, but, you know, it's something, I guess, to keep in mind at some point that, like, at the core of this is a real crime that did happen.
Yes.
Bully came out July 14th, 2001, had a budget of $2.1 million, box office of $1.4 million. I think it was kind of a limited release, and, you know, this subject matter is not something that's going to get a wide audience. But critics are split on it as well. Rotten Tomatoes has a 54%, with audience a little bit higher of 69%. And I guess the one other thing to mention with that is, like, Roger Ebert was a big fan of this movie and really kind of pushed it. And I think probably got it what little audience it did get. But anyway, this movie opens with Brad Renfro, who plays a real-life person named Marty Puccio, who it just starts with him on the phone talking to somebody saying, "I want you to suck my big dick." So it's a movie that kind of gets your attention right away. It's like, what the fuck is this? They don't really explain what he's doing, but you find out later that he's, like, I think talking to, like, gay dudes that they, like, pick up at this gay club. Like, gay older men who want to talk to teenage boys. It's fucked up. He's kind of your main character, and your other main character is Bobby Kent, played by Nick Stahl, who kind of disappeared after this. Like, he was in that Terminator movie and this, and I haven't really seen it a ton since. He still acts, but, you know.
Yeah.
His career didn't take off quite like you expected.
Yeah, not after, you know, he should have been, like, the big guy and, you know, coming into those movies, like, out of Terminator 3 and stuff. And
yeah, never happened. I think Brad Renfro's career would have really taken off. I think he's great in this. But unfortunately, he died. He had lots of drug problems. I can't remember. I think he died years after this, but he probably had problems finding work because of his drug problems. He was actually completely fucked up during the production of this movie too. So you have, like, these two guys that kind of, like, surf and hang out together. It takes place in somewhere around, I think around, like, Hollywood, Florida or whatever. And then there's, like, these girls that they kind of are hooking up with, and you see right away that, like, Marty takes abuse from his friend Bobby in this. Like, when they first are kind of, like, shown talking to these girls, you know, he pushes his head into something, and he tells Marty that he could have the less attractive, like, the one that Bobby thinks is less attractive. Like, Nick Stahl, you know, Bobby here, he comes off like a total asshole in this.
Very much.
Like, right away, like, they make sure right away, you know, this guy's a piece of shit. He forces, like, I think it seems like they just beat these girls when we see them, like, at the beginning. And he, like, forces one of them to blow him. And while, like, she's blowing him, he's, like, looking in the back seat at the other girl while she's hooking up with Marty. Kind of like, I'm going to hook up with you, too. Like, just ultra creepy, sexist, just, like the title says, total bully. And I think that he's a scary character because, like, I knew people like this, sadly enough, growing up. Like, and so if I knew someone like this, it couldn't have been that uncommon.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty true to life. What,
yeah,
like how that character is portrayed. Probably everybody knows, maybe not to the extent that Bobby is, but
he's a little bit worse. I you know, he's like openly raping people in this.
Yeah, like, I mean, he is a bad dude, but everybody knows, like, the neighborhood asshole.
Yeah. And one thing I think, though, that is interesting about this, and the show Euphoria kind of has a character sort of like this, too, is that it does take time to show them as more than just two-dimensional, though. So, like, this character Bobby here, he's got some weird sexual, like, he's not 100% straight. Like, I think he's bi, and it's never really stated, but he's got, like, some hang up with the gay clubs and the gay porn, and he, like, invites another friend over to, like, show him this gay porn that he found. You're just like, his friend's like, I don't want to see that, dude. Like, why are you showing this to me?
Was that when Lisa came over to tell Marty she was pregnant?
It might be. It's near the beginning, I think.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's her cousin, Donnie, that drives her there. And he's like, yo, come on, watch it. And it's like, it's Marty and Bobby in that film.
Oh, was it?
Like, they have done gay porn.
Oh, God. I've seen this movie countless times, and I didn't even notice that. But, yeah, there's, like, another part. Actually, right, so there's a part where Marty is having sex with his girlfriend, and Bobby's in the bathroom, and he's, like, looking at himself in the mirror like he hates himself, and he spits in the mirror at himself. And then he goes out, and that's when he rapes. He's like, I think he, like, punches both of them, and he's like, I'm next.
He slaps, like, he like, whips Lisa, who is on top of Marty at the time, and then she's like, yo, look, what the fuck? And then Marty gets up all pissed off, and he knocks him out. And then,
yeah, and then he just
yells, I'm next. And then, like, they don't show it. But it is heavily implied that he raped her.
And there's so much, you know, teen sex and violence and drug use in this that, like, even when they don't show it, it's, like, in your head that, like you're just feeling dirty watching this.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the inciting incident. Like, it's the bullying of Marty. But once he crosses the line into rape, that's when it becomes, like, an idea. I think it becomes an idea in Marty's girlfriend's head. I think her name's Lisa.
Yeah.
It becomes an idea in her head that they should do something about Bobby. You know, and she brings it up to him, and he's like, I don't know what we could do other than kill him. And she's like, yeah, why don't we do that? Like, Marty is, like, so miserable right off the bat in this movie that he's begging his parents to move.
When it's sad because, like, you get glimpses of what his life was.
Yeah,
like, he was evidently, like, a championship surfer, and, like, interaction with Bobby continued interaction with Bobby has ruined his life.
But I get the impression that, like, both Marty and Bobby are more well off than the kids that they hang out with. Like, they're more affluent.
Yeah, definitely seems that way. Especially Bobby.
Yeah. And you get an interesting scene with Bobby at like his dinner table with his parents, and his parents think that Marty's the bad influence.
Yep.
But anyways, so that's kind of like gets the ball rolling. And they start, like, seriously considering this. and just kind of like devising their plan, openly talking about it on the phone, like what they're gonna do.
Yeah,
and I think a lot of the friends that they talk to are think it's kind of just talk. Like some of them clearly think it's just talk, because like as it builds towards its like, you know, big climax, like there's even one kid, this kid Derek, who's just like, wait, are we going to fight him, or are we going, are we really going, like he still doesn't realize. And it's just, you know, I think the movie is an indictment of the parents, but also of these kids too. Like it's just kids that like have no respect for life at some point. Like as bad as Bobby is, I mean, I think that killing somebody is not probably the right answer. You can figure something else out. I know it's not as easy as it might seem. Like,
I understand why they killed him, but it is like,
yeah,
you guys are bad people because like you have no respect for the fact of what you did. Like, in fact, the one guy, Donnie, just doesn't think he did anything.
He's mostly high the whole time. Yeah, and that's the kid. He's played by Michael Pitt, who would go on to be on Boardwalk Empire. Pretty good actor playing this total goofball kind of in this. Like this guy that's not taking anything that's happening very seriously.
He like slashes Bobby like 80 times. Yeah. I didn't do anything.
Yeah. They try setting him up for the murder one time, and I thought, I'm like, oh wow, we're already at the climax here, but it actually falls through. I think they give the gun. They wanted to have the one girl, Allie, do it, and she gives the gun to Lisa, Marty's girlfriend, and she kind of backs out.
She has the gun to his head, and she doesn't pull the trigger.
She claims it's because of her, you know, afterwards they're talking about, well, you pushed out. And she's like, well, it was my mom's gun and they could trace it. Fun little side note, there's a scene where Donnie and Derek go to the comic book shop and drop acid and play Mortal Kombat. Just really just took me back to the 90s. I'm like, they're talking about Babalities. I'm like, yeah, I miss the 90s. I don't miss all of the 90s because, you know, this reminds you that there's kind of a dark side too. They end up going to this older guy for help who he is played by Leo Fitzpatrick, who was the main star of the movie Kids, but he's older now in this. And they think he's like this, like he's in a gang and he's this hitman, they think he's in the mafia, but he's really just like this fucking older loser who hangs out in his garage with fucking like kids and like, you know, little like 12-year-old kids smoking cigarettes and shit. Like he's nobody, but because he thinks he's a badass and they think he's a badass, he's their fucking expert on how to kill. There's like a planning scene, I think they're on at his house and they're like on his front lawn and the camera's in the middle of all of them and it's like spinning all around like that 70s show style, like when they were smoking weed on that 70s show, but it's like spinning real fast, you almost get dizzy watching the scene. Then they go over to, I think, to Marty's garage and they're doing like their final planning, and that's when kid Derek's like, wait, you know, are we really going through with this?
And he seems the lead, like
he's a good kid.
Yeah, he's not. He's just really just looking out for his cousin Lisa. Like
he never would have done something like this without hanging out with these kids. And it's unfortunate, but he did participate in a murder, and so he ends up having to do the time for it too. They're basically going to do the same plan. And there's bats and knives and shit. It's kind of a chilling scene, I think, because of how kind of nonchalant and flippant the kids are. I mean, that's kind of what I think is chilling about the whole movie, is like how they don't consider what they're doing. Like, you know, yeah, he's a prick, but like you are going to take someone's life and you could very likely go to jail. Like, you know, spoilers, they do end up going to jail. Anyways. They go to the spot. On the way, Bobby's a total fucking dickhead. So you're totally like, man, fuck. Like, what they're doing is wrong, but God, fuck this fucking asshole. He finally even gets goofball Donnie pissed off at him. He keeps calling him Lonnie, and fucking Donnie's like, it's Donnie, dude. It's definitely Donnie. They get there. Their plan is not super complex, and they're still coming up with it on the fly when they get – they go to, like, the Everglades or whatever, right? They're like
– yeah, it's some canal. They're going to beat him up, murder him, and dump him in the canal.
And it's like – the plan is, like, very simple. It's like – Bobby is supposed to walk off with Allie, the one girl, another girl who he kind of like has raped. And then they send this girl who's a total space cadet towards them. And she just has to say something about alligators. And that's the cue. Goofball Donnie is the one that runs in and starts it all. But Marty comes in and really takes care of business. He like stabs him in the stomach, and the violence is I think it's not like overly, it's not more gory than things you would see in a horror movie, but I think it's like it's so disturbing because I don't know, there's something that feels real about it. Maybe it's because this isn't a horror movie, this setup is like a drama, and these are like characters, and they're dumb kids, and you're just like. I don't know. I don't know. For me, anyways, I don't know about you, but yeah, I just thought
there's not that moment. Like,
it's not fun,
right? Like, it's, you know, you watch it in a slasher or something like that. It's like, yeah, like they're getting them, but here it's like, but there's just like a callousness to everything, and they just they, I think that's what really is. Like, they think they're not doing anything, like, but you're like slowly killing this kid.
I mean, part of it is they're kids. When you're a kid, you're kind of dumb. You don't think about the future. You don't have a great concept of mortality like you do when you start to hit your 40s and stuff. You know what I mean? Like, it's you're an idiot.
It's like
luckily, most people don't do this.
Yeah, I mean, I've obviously never been in a situation like this, but like,
no.
to me, like, I don't know. Like, even if I was that angry, like, you would think when you make that first stab. Something in your head, like, you'd be, oh shit, like, what have I done?
Maybe it hits you, I'm at the point of no return, though, at that point.
Maybe, because, like, that
I think is,
like,
what happens here.
Because, like, you know, Donnie stabs him, and then Marty runs up and stabs him in the gut. But, like, the whole time, like, Bob, like, then there's, like, kind of a break, right? Like, because Bobby's like, hey, like, whatever I did, I'm really, really sorry about it.
The other thing in my notes here that like made it more disturbing for me, because he literally says, whatever I did, I'm sorry. Like, he's like begging them.
Right. I think that is maybe what made it so impactful was.
Yeah. Oh yeah. When he's pleading with them, like, this guy who's just been this total fucking dickhead. And he knows, like, he says, whatever I did, like, he knows that he's been such a bully to them. But at this point, they're committed, you know, and they just take turns stabbing him. To get him on the ground, Marty slits his throat, and that is graphic and gory, like straight out of a horror movie. And the older dumbass played by Leo Fitzpatrick comes in and finishes him off with, like, a lead pipe, I think, or, you know.
The bat. It's the bat, yeah. The Dirk. There's a funny line. It's not funny. It's like, it is, though. Because Leo,
they're planning it.
Yeah, no. Like, so the hitman guy like bats him over the head, right? Like,
yeah.
And like it cuts to black, and then they're afterwards they're like decompressing, trying to figure out, like, all right, we got to get our story straight. It's like, and he asks his cousin, he asks Lisa, like, where's the bat? Because I need to return it. It's like he bought the bat at like a sporting goods store.
He's gonna try to fucking.
He's gonna go return it.
Get his $20 back or whatever. Yeah. I don't even know what the bat is, but
it's like, holy shit! Like,
leave a bigger trail.
That's kind of the thing, though. It's like they don't get. They still don't get it. They murdered this guy, dumped him in the canal, and like this kid Derek, who's honestly he's a nice kid. He just got tied up wrongly with these people. Yeah. But he's like so in denial of what happened. He's like, I gotta return the bat. like, oh God.
They immediately start falling apart here. Oh, like, it's kind of spectacular.
Yes.
Like, you know, they like panic and they leave, and then they realize that they left shit there and they gotta go back, and I think what Marty thinks he left his sheath, like, for his knife there, and they're like, we got to cover up the tracks or whatever. But yeah, immediately turning on each other, like arguing who's responsible for the actual murder.
The only one that seems to understand is like the older guy. Like,
he does seem to understand, because he's like, we should get our, you know, this is a conversation we should have. He says, he's like, did you do it? Did you do it? Did you do it? Like, and he realizes they all did it. They're all going to be going to prison if you know, they get caught for this.
Right, because like Dirk's like, I didn't do anything. Like, he's like, but you helped me dump the body in the canal. Yeah. Yeah, but he was already dead. Was he dead? No, he was still breathing at the time.
Yeah, he was still, yeah. He probably wouldn't have made it, but yeah. And then it, you know, that's kind of like the big climax. But then the movie spends time with them after as it falls apart, like in the days following, and it really kind of goes quickly, where the guilt and the fear is like eating them alive. They're stupidly telling friends about it. Like, Lisa brags to her casual friend about it. Like,
she asks for a ride out to the murder site.
Like, yes. And this girl's looking at her like horrified. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? The alley girl, who's played by, we haven't talked about much in this, played by Bijou Phillips. She's like losing her mind, like barricading herself in her room and basically telling her mom, like, she like asks her mom, like, hypothetically, if you know you saw a murder and like, and you didn't report it, or if you reported it anonymously, are you in trouble? And her mom's like, what? So it all falls apart. Like, the cops come and bust in Marty's house and get them all, and we kind of end with them.
That is the one scene that, like, I was like, this is weird. Like, because
what? Which one?
The cops busting in to get Marty. It's like, seems very cartoonish almost, like, because it's the perspective is like you're on the couch,
yeah,
and like the cops bust in, they're all holding the guns out like directly at the camera. It's like, what the fuck is going on? Like, here?
Okay, I see what you're saying. I don't know, I never really got it from it. I think I'm so swept up by this point and just kind of in awe of like the stupidity of all of it. And I kind of like the music they start playing. I don't know if it's playing there, but it is playing over like this court scene. And it kind of ends on this court scene where, you know, they're all fucked and they're all standing trial together. And they're sitting there in the courtroom still arguing about who's the fucking rat.
To all of you. You all ratted each other out.
Yeah. And then you get, then it does the like this. This person, you know, a show clip from the movie. This person got 11 years. This person got life in prison. Marty Puccio, he got the, you know, death penalty, et cetera, et cetera. And that's, you know, it's the end of the movie. I think one side note before we just get into like what we thought of it all is near the end. I forgot who calls the. The Leo Fitzpatrick household, and like this younger kid answers.
I think Lisa is the one that calls.
Is Lisa, and then there's like an older guy standing behind the bar.
Yeah,
and you know, this kid's telling, like, relaying what she's saying to this guy, and he's like, "Tell her that you'll write her in prison," and he tells her to hang up. The older gentleman behind the bar, that's Larry Clark. That's the director. Okay. But anyways, I'll take your thoughts first on this.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty effective in what it's trying to do. It's telling a true story. It's just, you know, heavily dramatized. I think
fairly accurate too.
Yeah, yeah. I actually looked up the case afterwards and was like, this is pretty interesting.
Yeah.
And for, like, I really do think that, like, Nick Stahl comes off as, like, the supreme asshole. Like,
yeah.
I get why somebody might want to murder him, but this also, like, I think truly depicts, like, how kids would probably go about murdering somebody, because they're just fucking stupid. They don't have any, you know, there's no life experience. We're going to get away with this, right? We've committed the ultimate crime. Nobody's going to catch us, and then it just all immediately falls to shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think mostly does a pretty good job. I do think that, and you mentioned it earlier when you know, we started talking about it, there's like a lot of like nudity and sex in this film, and like I'm not a prude by any stretch. Like I've watched plenty of films that like, but it is like it's creepy in this.
I told you that there's a lot of people that kind of accuse Larry Clark of being a pedophile, and I think Bijou Phillips is not 18 in this. So.
Oh wow! And like she's the reason this film even got funded. Like
I saw an interview with Larry Clark. He didn't want her in the movie. He thought she was terrible.
Basically he thought she was a slut. And
she was a club kid. She was like he thought she had no business being an actor. It's just like, damn. He's like, I cut around her. I was like, okay.
Yeah, I mean, cut around her naked body, like all over the fucking place.
She got certain parts in. Yeah.
But yeah, like I mean, there's a lot of like naked Bijou Phillips and Rachel Miner in this.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, they're supposed to be young. And there are scenes that like, aren't even like, it's not, but there's a scene and I understand why they're doing it. Like, you know, they're showing that Rachel's been abused like herself, like she has bruises all up and down her body, but like, he's just like slowly like drawing the camera over her naked body. It's like, this is,
you're seeing the Larry Clark pedophile. There you go.
Like, this is a little much. Like, it's like, I understand. Like, I already got Bobby's an asshole. Like,
yeah,
you don't need to like, get me to like leer at Rachel Miner's naked body. But whatever, like ultimately, I think it's very effective.
I can't really turn on this guy because I think he was a provocative director. Like I think you watch his movies, you get a reaction. You know what I mean? Like, for me personally, I think it like takes what he was kind of doing in Kids, but actually has a plot to it. Like it's about an actual thing that happened, and I think it has, you know, it kind of drives home a similar point as Kids, but again, it's you know, not just a day hanging out with a bunch of fucked up kids and there's one of them has AIDS, like, and you know, this is more, we're doing a kind of a true crime story.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, before true crime took off like a decade later.
Yeah.
That's really what this is. It's just like a hardcore true crime story.
Yeah, and despite the fact that Ebert was a champion here for this movie, Larry Clark has pretty much been in director's jail since. I guess he did some movie after this that they never released where he had an actor actually jack off on camera. So,
I looked up like his history after this. I guess he's
released. Me too. I was like, what happened to this guy?
He released like two movies, like that. I mean, other movies as well, but he released something called Marfa Girl. And then Marfa Girl 2, like, through 4 years ago, then evidently, like, straight up has, like, unsimulated sex in it. Like,
yeah,
actors are actually fucking, so.
I get the accusations against him. And he comes off in the interview I was reading kind of like a dickhead. Like, this guy who buys into his own bullshit.
Yeah, like he's talking about. That's what I got out of him as well. Like,
I mean, sometimes you're cocky because you're right, and I kind of get it. Like, he's proud of Bully, and I get that, but he's like talking about how well directed it is and how he's moving the camera and this and that, and I'm like, dude, you're making me not want to defend you a little bit. And to be honest, everything that he's doing in his movies, I think Euphoria has done better. But, you know, without what he did, you might not have Euphoria, so.
Yeah.
Anyways, any final thoughts? Rating?
No, I mean, I think we've gone over, like, I think it's, you know, I think it's an effective movie. And I am going to go 7 out of 10.
Yeah, I think it's really effective, too. I've always really liked this one. Like, it's, there's something about it. There's something about the nonchalant planning, execution, and post-murder that, I don't know, I've always found really chilling. And I do think despite the fact that he might be a pedophile and kind of a dick. I think Larry Clark was a talented director, and I think this is probably his best work. I like this movie a lot. It's a 9 for me.
All right.
So Kat's boyfriend is taking her to Paris for the weekend, and my boyfriend's taking me to a disused quarry.
At your first opportunity, turn around.
It's beautiful.
Why don't we just find another spot?
I'm not going to be bullied away by a bunch of 12-year-olds.
Hey, guys, can you turn your sounds down, please?
I can't hear you, mate.
And what are you looking at? Are you looking at my tits? Fucking jog on.
Steve, where's the beach bag?
It's got the car keys in it. I just want my car back. Car keys, phone, wallet. You've had your fun.
First phone he sees, 999.
Now we've got to finish this.
Run! Listen to me. Go get help. Go! I'm fucking bleeding to death.
I've got to get us out of here. Can you hold on?
Wouldn't happen to have seen a bunch of kids tooling around on BMXs.
Little terrorists.
Alright, our second film is Eden Lake, which is written and directed by James Watkins, who he hasn't done a bunch. He did a movie called The Woman in Black. Did you see that?
Is that the one with Harry Potter in it?
He is in it, yeah.
I have not seen it, but I do know of it.
I haven't seen it either. I don't think I've seen anything else. I don't think he's done much besides those two. Yeah, written and directed by James Watkins. This came out September 12th, 2008. Had a budget of $2 million. Did a box office of about $4 million. Higher Rotten Tomatoes score from critics. It has 80% from critics. Audience is about the same as Bully. It's sitting at 66%. This is a British hoodie horror film, which actually, if you look this film up and you read the Wikipedia on it, it'll mention that it kind of kicked off this British subgenre called hoodie horror. I guess, you know, I had never heard of hoodie horror before.
What else is in hoodie horror?
I think one of the more famous ones would be Attack the Block.
Okay. All right.
But the short explanation is that it's kind of conservative horror that's like kind of demonizes poor people and you know, be afraid of the lower class people, that they're out of control. Their kids, there's a bunch of, and you know, the kids are out of control. They're causing crime. There's actually, we're going to be doing a series later this year that I will introduce. It kind of is like a American version of this. Of like, you know, the kids are out of control type thing. It's very reactionary, kind of right wing horror. But yeah, and I think this genre came about kind of as a reaction to some laws that Tony Blair was passing. I don't know. Again, you can look it up. It is a thing. But what we have here is it's Michael Fassbender and Kelly Reilly are this couple who are going to this quarry, this like flooded quarry, right? Like he's taking her on a romantic getaway where he's going to propose to her. I don't know if I don't think she knows this.
No, she didn't know that.
And right away you're getting like these like signs that the kids are out of like, like even like little things like they're driving on the way to this place, and like he almost hits some kids as he's going through an intersection. Like they like fly by on their bikes. You know, it's like the kids are like this out of control danger that are lurking everywhere. They go to like this bed and breakfast place that's near where they're gonna camp for the weekend, and they're like, you know, drinking in this like beer garden behind the place at this picnic table, and the lower class parents with their kids are just running around fucking being total maniacs and kind of ruining the whole like vibe that this couple's trying to have. And that's kind of like
great scene how, there. Great moment yeah. there where Michael Fassbender goes like somebody needs to like, it sounds like just like out of like, you know, it's out of an old person's mouth. Like somebody yeah. needs to smack that kid. As he's about to say it, you just whack.
Yeah, the mom. And everyone has been in situations like this, right? Like, you've been at a restaurant where the kid, like, and you're like, why are they fucking letting their kids run around like that? You know what I mean? Like, anyways. But he wants to show her this place. Like, he thinks it's, like, a really beautiful spot. And he wants to show her it before, it's called, like, Slapton Quarry. And he wants to show her it to before it gets developed into this gated community that's going to be called Eden Lake.
Mm-hmm.
I
think they've been anyways, there before.
He's been there. Oh, he's been there. Okay. She has never seen, because he keeps telling her, like, I promise you, it's beautiful. Like, you know, he keeps telling her this. Like, and, you know, and they get there, and it's nice. It's, like, this nice, like, scenic, like, you know, basically lake setting. And they're laying out on the shore, and, of course, they're there, like, 5 minutes. And these fucking punk teens show up with their Rottweiler. And I'd say they're like, you know, what, 12 to 14-year-old kids, right? Like, they're not supposed to be, like, 16, 17, I don't think. I don't know. What would you say the ages of these kids?
I think the older one, Brett, maybe.
The leader?
Yeah, I think he's probably, like, 16, maybe 17. I think the rest are younger.
They come off as, like, yeah, 14, 15, like right, they're right about to reach driving age and cause havoc elsewhere.
Yeah, I think there's like one I think who is like he might be the same age as Brett. It's a similar relationship actually to Bully where he is like bullying his like, you know, his second basically.
You have the sociopath who has the stronger personality. He's the leader, right?
Yeah.
And again, it's like I said, I hate to admit this. I was a good friend with someone like this in real life as a kid, and you know, that's why I think maybe these movies are like really chilling to me, because I could picture them. I could picture either of these movies actually kind of happening. Mm-hmm. Although this movie, I do think at some point it takes a turn into being a real genre like horror movie, right? But man, even still, it's so bleak and it's so cynical about people. But anyways, getting ahead of ourselves here a little bit. They're hanging out on the beach. These fucking kids show up with their dog. They're letting the dog run over and bark right in his, you know, girlfriend's face. He's like slobbering all over her. You know, Fassbender gets pissed. You know, this is supposed to be like this romantic getaway where he's proposing to her, and he's got these fucking kids just like making their life hell, blasting this fucking music. He goes over to yell at them. They're like completely, not just dismissive, but like, what do they like say that she's a bitch? Like, I don't know. Like, I would. I don't know how I would not have lost it on these fucking kids right away. Like they even walk by them, and the leader kid pulls his dick out and shakes it at him. But the kids go away. They camp there for the night. There is a sequence in this movie I think they should have cut. So it's like the next morning they go into town. He's like asking the waitress, have you seen some kids with bikes? It's like, yeah, dude, that's like, everywhere. It could be any kid. Yeah, like, it's stupid. And then he like sees a house with their bikes in front of it, and he like stupidly, like very stupidly walks into a house. Like, that's a dumb thing to do, dude. Like, you don't walk into somebody's house.
No.
I was just like, this guy's a fucking idiot. And But then, like, the whole scene amounts to nothing. Because, like,
yeah,
the dad...
So stupid. He escapes out the window. Yeah. It's weird.
It's the one scene in the movie that I'm just like, I just don't know why you didn't cut it. Like, you didn't need it for padding, and it amounts to nothing, and it's stupid. Like, because you want the behavior of these people to not be completely stupid.
I guess the only thing... You do get something out of it, because it's Brett's dad. He's the leader, and it's his house. It's that house.
And you have an idea of where these kids are coming from, maybe?
Yes, because his dad is
and
a fucking asshole.
And I think it becomes important to later, yes. Right? Like
that's the only thing here that
I think you're fine without it. I think you cut. I'll be honest. When I got to the end of the movie, I think I saw the ending coming. Anyways, but we're gonna talk about the ending because I'm really interested in what you thought of this. But anyways, they go back. These kids fucking steal their car. Like, they steal this truck. And they're wandering around till night looking for fucking these kids. He finds them, and he tells them, hey, like, I don't care. They're, like, torturing some animal in a cage. He's like, I don't care what you're doing here. I want my phone, wallet, keys. Let me get the fuck out of here. The kids, of course, still being real fucking pricks. They get in a scuffle. I think he grabs one of their knives and accidentally stabs their dog in the neck, and the dog dies. And honestly, I think it feels like a natural escalation here. Like, I could really see that accidentally happening, and then kind of all bets are off after that, right? Like, this fucking psychopath kid, you kill his dog, I could see him fucking going apeshit.
Right, you can see him snapping, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He throws in the keys and they take off, but then the kid like snaps when he realizes that his dog is actually dead, and they start chasing him down. Fassbender crashes into a tree. Terrible driving in this movie, and he gets pinned. Part of a tree branch just comes through the window, and he gets pinned. He tells her to fucking take off and get help.
Yeah, I'm questioning like multiple times, like. They're in a car. They get a car, and these kids are like riding like fucking Lance Armstrong, like 40 miles an hour. They're like,
you don't have to drive that fast. It's fucking roll out.
Yeah,
see, like, kids,
they're on fucking BMX bikes. Like, they're not gonna catch up to you.
Don't crash into a tree. And it happens again later. She crashes again. I mean, she's been through fucking hell and back. This actress, Kelly Riley, they put her through fucking hell in this movie. Jesus Christ, dude. But yeah. She takes off. Like, he tells her to take off and get help. And, like, she, like, hides till the morning. Like, I don't understand what she does all night. It's another weird thing where I'm just like, did I miss something? She goes back to the truck in the morning, and he's, like, not there. And then she finds the kids. The kids got him tied up, and they are, like, torturing him. Like... one of the kids, I love this dynamic, like, you kind of brought it up before, like, there's, like, at least, like, one or two of these kids that don't want to be doing this at all.
Yeah.
But because they're friends with this fucking psychopath, he forces them into things, like, he gets them to do things that they wouldn't do otherwise. But yeah, one of the kids says, like, we should let him go. And then he gives him the knife, and he makes him do the first cut on the guy. While the one girl in the group records on her phone, another kid just fucking takes it upon himself to, like, he pulls out a box cutter and actually stabs him. And they all kind of start taking their turns with him. And this is, like, straight up torture at this point, you know? One kid, like, stabs him in the mouth. Oh, man. It's pretty horrifying. Meanwhile, she's watching this, like, his girlfriend is watching this all happen, and she I don't know what device she has. Do you remember 2008?
She had, like, some sort of PDA or something.
Yeah, she, like, pairs up to one of their phones, and she makes, I think it's the leader's phone, she makes the dial 999, which I'm guessing is their version of 911. They quickly realize that she's there to give chase, and... Then what you get for, like, a lot of the rest of the movie is, like, I think a pretty tense and effective cat and mouse chase in the woods here. A lot of like she'll find a shack, like she finds like this, you know, one of the construction company that's got, you know, these little work shacks out there, and she, like, you know, is trying to find whatever, something. The kids will show up, then she has to hide on top. She fucking hooks up with him again. I think he gets loose, right? He gets out of like the shit.
He does get out of the barbed wire, and he like kind of stumbles away and almost kills her. Like, he thinks he's being chased by the kids, and he's picked up like a pipe or something.
He goes back to his truck and he gets like a tire iron, yes, and a first aid kit. And he's, you know, he's running around so panicked that when they run into each other, he almost fucking hits her with the tire iron. And then they find another shack. She starts treating his wounds in there. And this is where you see like how serious and gruesome the wounds are. Like, she like opens his shirt and yeah, pretty like gross and scary looking, you know, wounds on him. She finds the ring that he had, you know, you get this little like emotional moment. I think Fassbender is really great at acting like he's going in shock. Like, yeah, he's like,
he does a pretty good job
freaking out here. Yeah. The kids come and she like hides him underneath. She like hides underneath the shack in the water with him for a while. But then she like hides him off. She just finds a spot in the woods and like throws some fucking branches and shit over him and tells him like, you know, just hang on. Like, I don't know if we see him die after that, but it's pretty much he's done for.
Yeah, we see him again, but I think we don't actually see him die.
Okay, but yeah, you pretty much know he's not making it. He's in real bad shape and not getting any sort of medical help. The kids find her again. They fucking tie her up and light her on fire. And the fire like burns the ropes that they were using. So she runs off again. And this is where I think it goes crazy over the top and complete, you know, genre stuff is, because like there's this fucking other kid who's not with them the whole movie. It's like this innocent like kid who's just kind of exploring in the woods by himself, and that he shows up again, and our fucking psychopath leader grabs him here and lights him on fire to get her to come back. It's like, well, I'm like, holy shit,
so
dude.
So like that little kid Adam is used to like, I don't know, Brett or, and that gang must have gotten to him before she did. And he leads her into like basically like
a trap or whatever. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and that's when they you know, they catch her, and they light her and her dead boyfriend on fire.
They make him do it, right? Like the kid.
Yeah. He's like, I don't want to do it. Yeah. He lights the match. It doesn't go, and it's like, no, you're gonna do it. Drop it there, and like, you know, he lights the. Basically, the boyfriend catches on fire and she's able to escape. But then as she's running away, like, he douses this little kid in...
He's like, if you don't come back, I'm going to fucking murder the, you know, like, and he does it. He does it. He's not fucking around.
You get the shot of her up on the ridge overlooking
the kids. And you see his kid burning in the back.
Like, holy shit.
My note at this part was, this movie is nihilistic, because it really is. And this is when their group kind of, again, you know, I've seen echoes of Bully here. Like, their group falls apart. Like, the one kid that didn't want to do anything, he tries to call the police and leave. And the leader just beats him to death here. The girl runs off. Like, the teen girl runs off. You know, they're turning on each other a little bit here. And our main actress, Kelly Riley, she runs into this kid. She like runs out in a path, and there's like someone in a car driving by. This kid picks her up, and she's like, we need to get the fuck out of here. And he's like, yeah, just 1 minute, you know, we're heading in. He's like, she's like, no, we need to be heading the fuck out of here. He's like, ah, but I'm looking for my little brother. And that's when you realize, oh god, his little brother's one of these kids.
Yeah. Before that though, we missed where she stabs the little
of
in the neck. And it's just a, you know, it's just a natural reaction. Like, they sneaking up on her, and she lashes out with a piece of glass and stabs.
She kills the one kid that didn't want to do anything. Like, he actually walks up behind her, and he's like, "Miss," like he was gonna help her.
Yeah,
but she's so had it at this point. I think this is right around where my note that this movie is nihilistic, because again, it's like other movies would have her and that kid team up or something, yeah. You know. And it's just like, we're murdering fucking 12-year-old kids left and right in this fucking thing. You know, we're murdering the good kids. I'm sorry, I forgot about that part. And then during this whole part, too, she has to get into this fucking dumpster filled with shit.
Yep.
Oh, she's just covered in
crap.
Yeah, like, you know, she totally looks like out of a horror movie now. Anyways, So she gets picked up by this kid. He's like dragging her back into the madness. He like pulls up to the fence of this construction area, and he gets out calling for his brother. She steals the car, and as she's driving away, she sees the teen girl from the group that who has run off on her own.
Yeah, because she's done too. Like she's like, this is too much. Like, you know, the little kids died. You've beaten your best friend to death. Like, I'm done. I'm out of here.
Yeah. And so when our main girl here sees this girl, she fucking speeds up and fucking plows into her. My note here was, I feel kind of guilty about liking her getting even with these little kids.
Yeah.
Because they're such little fucking assholes. Anyways, she gets back to civilization, but of course she crashes the car.
Man, awful drivers, awful.
Yeah,
drivers.
Yeah. Just like, we're crashing cars for for plot reasons here. But then she gets out and she wanders into this adult party, and all the adults are taking care of her. They're like, "Whoa, man, this is real bad." But one of the ladies at the party gets a call, and this lady looks like the girl's mom. Like, they really look the same. Basically, the parents put together, oh shit, like, you know, the kids she's talking about and she ran into are our kids. Our fucking psychopath leader shows up at this point.
And they find out that the littlest one, the one that she
sees, yeah, they know that they know that some of their kids have died,
yeah,
right?
And like, that's what sets, I think that is maybe more than anything what sets them off. And you see the dynamic of the parents, the same dynamic that the kids have together that the parents have, because the parent of Brett, who we've already established is an asshole. He has like another one that's like more rational. Hey, let's just call the police and have this sorted out. It's like, no, our kids have died. Like, we'll handle this ourselves. Like,
I think there is a part of them that realizes though that their kids have done something horrible.
Oh, 100%.
And you know, they're going to cover it up for their kids. And I think a lot of parents would. I really do. Like, I think there's people again. So let's say what happens here at the end. They take our main, like these parents take our main character into the bathroom here and kill her.
Yeah.
Like you don't see it, but you hear it happening. And the one dad says, you know, we look out for our own, or we look after our own around here. And then our final scene, which I thought was pretty good. Like, this is pretty chilling. Like, you see our leader here, the kid leader, like he goes and looks at himself in the mirror, and he's putting on his glasses on and off, like, I don't know, assessing himself in the mirror, and he fucking looks at his phone, realizes he still has the videos on there, he just deletes them all, and I think he realizes he's gonna get away with it, and that's the end.
Yeah, and he puts on Steve, the boyfriend, puts on his sunglasses, the aviators.
Yeah. And, like,
stares into the mirror. It's like really chilling. Like,
yeah.
Like, this kid's gonna kill other people.
Well, this kid, you know, he's gonna do whatever he wants in life. He's gonna get away with it. And I don't know. What do you think of the parents' reaction? You think it's real? You think it's too over the top, too bleak of an ending? Like, I'm real interested. I think a lot of people would turn on this movie because they don't like the ending, I think, but yeah, I like it personally.
I mean, it is very bleak. Like, this movie is, I think you said, it's like, it's nihilistic. Like, it's,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I can see a certain type of parent. Certainly the Brett parent, right? Like the way he's portrayed as we're gonna hit. Like they're not smart. Like the reality is like you kill this lady, somebody like they're I'm gonna like, somebody's gonna come looking for him.
Right? There's so much evidence of everything everywhere, right?
And like that kid, that other kid's mom is gonna look for him. Like, and you've lit this guy on fire. Like, they're not going to think it was her. They're going to tie everything together eventually. And you're all going to jail. like the kids and the parents, like you're all fucked at this point. You know, you could have called the police and been like, you know, they're kids. Like they'll likely go to juvenile detention until they're 18 or whatever, but they'll probably have a future. You're just fucking it up. Like your whole neighborhood's fucked now.
Yeah, I mean, you're thinking of it rationally, but I don't have kids, but I think your natural instinct is to do whatever to cover up what your kids did, you know? I don't know.
I think there's certainly parents that would. There's others that are like, we're going to do this. We're going to protect you as best we can.
Yeah.
But we're going to end this here. We're not going to escalate it further.
But what are you saying? You're not murdering this lady here?
Yeah, I'm not bringing her into my bathroom and stabbing her to death. And then, like, trying to, like, I don't, like, what do you do with the body?
Ask your son. He'll figure it out, you know?
I guess if you have, like, a fucking psychopath as a kid, maybe you're coming up with some other ideas. I don't know, like, I do kind of like how it ends, just like, hey, you know, leave it to your imagination. They're going to fucking, like, torture this chick in the bathroom and murder her. And we know that Brett is a fucking lunatic. And just don't think too much about what happens next, because
eventually
the police are going to
kill him. It probably falls apart. I don't know. Maybe they get away with it, though. Like, there's part of me that says, just looking at that kid, like, he knows he's just gonna get away with what he wants to in life.
He certainly thinks it at the very
least. Yeah. I dig it. Like, I dig that ending because I love going for the dark ending.
It's certainly not like what you expect, right? Like, you expect her to pull up. Actually, like, you kind of mentioned it, like, when the little kid shows up, like, you expect them to team up and they escape and they're able to get to the police. And then it might have, like, a dark ending there where the police, you know, is, like, the police chief is somebody's related to him or whatever. But, traditionally, that's not how this would go. This just goes super dark. And I think you did kind of, like, say, like, you know, it's conservative horror, right? It's like... Mm-hmm. This is what the poor people would do. Like, they're uncivilized. They have no respect for the law, no respect for authority. Even though the reality is that most of them are conservative themselves. But, everybody that would look at this would be like, I'm better than these people. These are the people we need to protect against.
What I like about it, though, I buy into that parents would do it. And I think that rich people would do it too. Like, they have the means to do it. Yes. They could tell their fucking goons, you know. There's actually a plot line in Succession that is kind of like, we're going to cover up what your dumb kid did. And you could do it because you're rich, right? In the case here, it's like showing these lower class people doing it. But I just think it's applicable to anybody. I think that I don't think any parent would do this, but I buy that parents would do this, right? And I think it's in line with the rest of the movie, with how nihilistic the rest of the movie is. Like, and 100%. I dig going for the dark ending. Fair. So anyways, I mean, we covered the movie here. I guess I get your thoughts and rating, man.
I mean, it is a dark film. It is not one that I want to ever watch again. Like, it is, I don't necessarily, like, I think it was an interesting watch. It is definitely, like, unnerving.
Okay.
But, yeah, it's not something, like, I'm like, pop this on. Like, it is not a fun watch. Okay. I could see rewatching Bully as, you know, just.
Wow. Okay.
In terms of like the you know, to get the story there. Like, I don't care. Like, this, everybody is nasty in this, like, except for obviously our two victims. And it's like, there's no fun to be had. It's like, even though Bully is based on a true story, it's like,
yeah,
these kids are stupid. And it's like, here, it's like, yeah, these kids are stupid, but I don't know, like, everybody's so mean. And the bully wins, right? Like
yeah,
ultimately,
yeah.
Everybody pays in Bully. Whereas
that's true. That's true. Good point. Good point.
Only the bad people win here.
All right.
But I think I'm gonna end up 6 out of 10.
Okay.
For me on this one.
See, that's funny that you say all that, because I find this to be more of a genre movie than Bully, and so to me this is like, for as dark and disturbing as it is, it's like less disturbing to me than Bully. But yeah, it is. This is very dark and bleak, but I love horror that goes for it like this. I rate this pretty high.
Nice.
You know, I rewatch Bully more. You know, I've seen Bully probably at least 5 times. But you know, Bully is because I think it, like, again, for any faults that the Larry Clark has as a person, I think he's pretty talented as a director. I think it's really well made movie.
Mm-hmm.
This is to me just like fun. I mean, not fun. It's more just a genre movie. You know,
for sure, it is definitely. It is a horror film through and through.
Yeah.
It is not, you know, it's not supernatural horror. It is realistic horror. I think that is what makes it maybe the scary part.
But at the end of the day, to me, I think it's pretty damn good for what it is. So I give it an 8 out of 10. And then it sounds to me like we both are rating Bully higher here and kind of giving this one to Bully.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I think so.
I did a poll. I actually did the poll in 2 places this time, because I didn't think enough people would have seen these. And it's weird, like, Eden Lake blew away Bully on Twitter, and then on Facebook, Bully blew away Eden Lake, which is interesting too, because I did the poll on Facebook in a horror group, and people went for Bully.
Interesting.
Anyways, it ended up being pretty close by 2 votes. Bully with 55% of the vote and Eden Lake with 45%. So, but all 3 of us, me, you, the people on the internet that I asked this to, all kind of said Bully is the better film here.
There you go.
What are we doing next month?
All right. So we're going to stick with horror.
All right.
And next month, you know, this episode is our March episode. Next month will be our April episode, and Easter is in April.
Oh boy.
So I am fascinated by religious horror.
Okay. I thought you were going to say Easter bunny horror.
No. I mean, that might be a thing.
I was like, are we doing Critters too? Where the fuck the Easter bunny gets killed? Anyways.
No, we're not. We are... So, in 2004 and 2005, there were a pair of prequels to The Exorcist that were made. One by Rennie Harlan and one by Paul Schrader. We're going to watch Exorcist The Beginning and Dominion, prequel to The Exorcist. They are... I don't know if I've seen either one of these.
I did not know either of these existed, dude, to be honest with you.
So Rennie Harlan is Nightmare on Elm Street 4, Die Hard 2, Cliffhanger,
yeah.
Long
Kiss Fun,
Goodnight.
Kind of fun, you know,
yeah.
C-tier director. I like his stuff.
Yeah, like I'm generally a fan of his stuff. Like,
you know it's he does junk food and it's fun.
Yes.
I don't know.
He did like my second favorite shark movie, Deep Blue Sea. So, and then Paul Schrader did Dominion. I'm trying to see what he has done.
We've covered him on the show. He did Cat People.
Yes.
He's not known as a horror director, but apparently he's done at least two horror movies.
Yeah.
He's known as like this. He did The Card Counter last year with, what's his name? Oscar Isaac.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's had a late career resurgence when he's not getting in trouble on Facebook. With, you know, with The Card Counter, and he did First Reformed with Ethan Hawke a few years ago.
Yep.
And I really like his movies, and I really loved Cat People. It might be one of my favorite movies by him.
So, I did a little bit of looking into both of these. Both were filmed, they're both done by, I believe, the same production company, which is weird, because they are separate. They do not tie together.
And they're both prequels to The Exorcist.
Both prequels to The Exorcist.
Wow, dude, how did I not remember this?
And William Blatty, that's the guy's name.
Yeah,
Peter Blatty. He evidently hated Rennie Harlan's movie, liked Paul Schrader. He worked on both, but he enjoyed Paul Schrader's film. But I believe that Roger Ebert liked Exorcist the Beginning.
Is that Schrader's?
That is Rennie Harlan's.
Wow. All right. I somehow don't remember either of these coming out. And I was full on movie geek already at that point. But
and I think
some shit slips through the cracks.
Yeah, I don't believe. If I have seen these, I do not remember them. So I think it'll be kind of fun to
for sure.
And also, I think it's timely in a way. We're a little bit early, but David Gordon Green's next horror series is rebooting The Exorcist.
A trilogy, right?
As a trilogy. Yeah. So, you know, he's the one doing the new Halloween films.
I really wonder how he'll handle it. Like, again, I thought he did excellent with Halloween. I even love Halloween Kills. Exorcist is a whole different beast, though.
Yeah, it could go either way. But he seems, and he's doing it with Jason Blum, again through Blumhouse Productions. I think he has a love for horror, and an appreciation for it. I think he got Halloween in that.
Yeah,
so hopefully he gets The Exorcist. It's certainly a different type of film, but
he went on Joe Bob last year, and Joe Bob was kind of asking him, like, you do like Eastbound and Down and the shit, like, you know, why on earth, like, what is your interest in doing horror now? And I love David Gordon Green's answer. He was like, hey man, sometimes you walk in the video store and you want a comedy, and sometimes you walk in the video store and you want a horror movie. And I was like, yeah, dude, I guess that, you know, like, you know what I mean? Like, you can have multiple interests. It doesn't have to be one thing.
Right. You don't have to stick just with that.
Yeah.
And he seems talented enough that he can do both. But
he's a good director, I think. Yeah.
But we are going to we're gonna prequel up The Exorcist. I'm not speaking to the quality of these films.
Like, I don't know.
You brought two high quality films this month.
Don't worry.
Could be bringing two shit films, but.
I was prepared for you to say you didn't like these movies, and I was going to tell you, guess what? It's getting no better from here, because I am bringing some real shit to the show this year that you are just going to be like, why the fuck did you do this to me? So I hope you enjoyed these ones. I hope you enjoy the next ones, because it's going to be downhill from here with some straight-to-video fucking shit.
So these ones, they're streaming, but you probably have to rent them somewhere.
Okay.
I did not see them anywhere for free, which is this is how I ended up on these, because there was another kind of exorcism film from Korea, I believe, called The Priests, which seems very cool, but yeah. We're not going to get to watch that because it's just not available anywhere.
You know what's so weird, though? It's like Exorcist 3 now gets all this talk. And that was directed by William Peter Blatty. Mm-hmm. Like, that's one that people are like, oh, it wasn't understood at the time, and it's great now. You know, everyone loves Exorcist 3. I've never heard anything about either of these two movies. Again, I didn't know they existed, so
there we go.
We're going to be the ones, Chris. We're going to be the ones to start the resurgence of these prequels that came out. They came out the same year?
2004 and then 2005, so back to back.
Wow, like within
a
year.
They're not tied to each other.
That's like two people competing to try to do an Exorcist movie. Weird.
And what's interesting? What's so weird about it is I believe that they're both by, I think, yeah, they're both by Morgan Creek Productions, distributed by Warner Brothers. Like these are
they somehow gave the green light to two different fucking directors.
Yes. Yeah, oh, whoops, they had, we did that? They had a like shared budget between them of $80 million.
What the fuck? Whoa, what the fuck? Interesting, dude.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go in blind. I'm not gonna read anything about these. I'm gonna go in and fucking just watch.
So weird. They might be terrible, so if they are, apologies, right. But I'm looking forward to it.
Once again, dude, you don't have to apologize for shit, because I'm going to put you through at least 3-4 movies this year that you're going to be like, why did you do this to us? Because we sometimes, like, you have to celebrate, you have to dig up the trash sometimes that's been forgotten.
Yeah, you know what? That's a great point, like, because...
Some of the stuff I'm going to bring is going to be like... Perfect, like Chris, buy a 6-pack of beer and turn these movies on at like midnight, you know.
But I think you need to watch. Like, I mean, I'm not saying the films that you're going to bring are bad or that these next ones we're going to watch are bad, but I do think you need to watch like a whole swath. Like people that are like, you know, whatever movie is the worst thing you've ever seen, and it's like you haven't watched enough movies.
It's like, that's why I wouldn't even say that about the new Texas Chainsaw. It's like, no, dude, there's worse stuff.
It's and not some even of the worst Texas Chainsaw movie.
There's way worse Texas Chainsaw movies, and some of that really bad stuff is fun to watch with some beer late at night.
Yes.
Like you're just like looking at it, going, and that's the stuff I'm choosing. Is stuff that you're gonna, as for as bad as they are, you're gonna be like, this, I can't believe I'm watching this. You're just gonna be saying that the whole time.
It'd be a good time.
So, yeah, but yeah, I guess we'll be back next month with these forgotten Exorcist prequels, and possibly our last good movies of the year.
Oh no. All right.
Well, been fun. See you guys next month.